Well, what's happening, everybody? You're now tuning into the Producers Corner with Spud Too Tight, and I have another hot show for you today. On the phone with me, I have a very talented jazz pianist who has already performed for millions of people, both locally and nationally. He was also recruited by recording artist Matt Morris, and the two performed together on The Late Show with David Letterman, the CBS Morning Show, Second Cup Cafe, and Lopez Tonight. Please put your hands together and welcome jazz pianist, composer, and producer, John Wirtz. What's happening, John?
Not too much. How about you, Spud?
Oh, man, I'm doing pretty good, man. Maintaining and keeping it going. Well, John, you know, thanks for so much and taking your time and chopping it up with me on the show, man. I had a chance to listen to the material, and I'm just very impressed by it. I mean, it's such melodic flavor going on. It's fresh and new, but it still maintains the classic foundation of jazz at the same time, man. And, you know, the two combinations just really work well together.
Thanks, man. I appreciate that, especially coming from a keyboardist.
Oh, yeah, man. You know, I'm a fan of other musicians, you know, as creators, man. I just really think it's cool for us just to be fans of one another, man. And, you know, you can't help but to recognize talent. So hats off to you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
So, John, man, when did this music journey start for you, man? I mean, how did you start and evolve to the seasoned musician that you are today, man?
For me, it started when I was 8 years old. My parents got me, they weren't really sure what to do for my birthday, I think, so they just kind of took a guess and got me this little keyboard, and I just took to it and kind of started playing right away and starting to pick up a little bit of stuff by ear pretty quickly, and from there they got me into lessons, and that's kind of what got me started on the whole thing.
Right. And who were some of the artists that really inspired you to really take this to a full-time career?
Well, early on, my teacher didn't really go the traditional route. Like, he didn't start with classical music. He kind of just had me doing, like, pop tunes, and that was back in, you know, late 80s, so just kind of some bad pop music. And then, but what really got me in is he introduced me to Glenn Miller's music, and that was my first kind of taste of jazz, and that really kind of hooked me, and then from there, it kind of led to me getting really interested in blues, and throughout high school, like classic rock, and I was, you know, heavy into like Eric Clapton and that kind of stuff, and really wasn't until I got to probably my early 20s when I got more into jazz specifically, like I think Thelonious Monk and then Miles, and then from there it just kind of the floodgates opened, and so that was kind of the earliest, I guess.
You know, it's always cool, man. I talk to a lot of guys on ear maturity and, you know, have an appreciation for jazz. You know, some guys start really young and just really get into jazz in their teens, early teens, and from there just explore, man. But, you know, I really think we really appreciate jazz at a later age, you know, as far as my ear goes anyways. You know, I've always been a fan of it, but, you know, I didn't really start composing and recording, you know, smooth jazz and urban jazz, man, until I really got my late 20s and early 30s, and from there, man, just kind of soared on. So, nothing against pop music, man. It's just kind of cool just to have that background, just to build, you know, just to build the mechanics as a keyboardist and a player. You know, we kind of have to evolve. So, you know, no disrespect to pop music, but, you know, to really evolve as a player, jazz is where it's at.
Yeah, no disrespect at all. I mean, I listen to some pop music. I play pop music. I mean, I think it's, I was talking with someone the other day, actually, another musician, and we were discussing how it kind of feels unhealthy to not like, you know, a certain type of music. I mean, there's obviously musicians and people are going to be drawn towards, you know, like for jazz example, you know, like you might be more into one style, but to say I hate all country music, like there's got to be something you can take from any style that you like, you know, that's only going to help develop your playing. Just to say that you hate one certain style is just kind of closing you off, I think, from growing a little bit more as a musician.
Oh, no, I totally agree with you, man. You know, it also prevents writer's block. You know, I hear a lot of guys talk about writer's block, and I say, well, I can possibly see you getting writer's block if you're sticking to one style or genre musically as a creator, you know, but when you start pulling from different attributes from different styles of music, country, blues, pop, jazz, I mean, there's just endless of combinations and compositions you can come up with, so I just think it's a plus to get outside the box.
That's a great point, yeah. I mean, it helps with your writing, too, to be able to draw different backgrounds.
Definitely. You know, John, I got to ask you, man, I love your music, the way you play, and I just think it's only fair for the creator to really describe their sonic signature as a composer, producer, and a player. I mean, how would you describe your style? I mean, I know you're jazz, but there's so many other elements that I think you're pulling in. You know, kind of give me your collage of musical ideas.
Wow, that's a hard question. I would say that I don't come, you know, like I didn't learn jazz at an early age, so I don't have, compared to a lot of jazz musicians, I don't have like a huge background. You know, for me, it's relatively new. I've been studying it for, you know, only the past, I'd say 11 years. But before that was more into like blues and rock and anything that would include improvisation. I mean, I was, you know, college, I was really into jam bands and that kind of stuff. So I think compared to a lot of jazz musicians that I personally know, I think I might have more of a mainstream kind of pop background, but not in a negative way. I think it helped me develop a sense of melody early on, and it helped me to learn theory, you know, pretty quickly before it got more complicated when you start to get into jazz and theory gets a little more complicated, but the sense of melody and was there pretty strong early on, which only helps when you start, you know, complicating things and adding different, you know, jazz harmonies, I guess.
Right. You know, what's cool about jazz, man, you know, there's just so many different ways to play, and, you know, as our playing ability gets better, more seasoned, you know, we're able to add the substitution chords and some of the more complex chords and, you know, improv runs. And, you know, I really feel that building your chops as a player, you know, it has to be centered around jazz and having that foundation. And from there, we can just start pulling in and really improvising from different things and the arrangement, the timing, and then the off-center timing. And I mean, it just really takes your mind to another place, you know, when you're running your solos and improvising within the song, you know, because it could change, man, right out the spot, you know, with your band. It's like, man, where were you going on that one?
right. I mean, just, I think the biggest challenge, and, you know, like I find myself always trying to remind myself, is just to stay present, because, you know, you always hear of when you make a mistake, that really can be kind of the doorway to greatest part of what you're playing. And so just staying present, and like you were saying earlier, just drawing from different styles of music. I mean, like, you know, I play sometimes like R&B stuff, and like a big thing I learned from, you know, that genre of music is how effective space is, you know. And just jazz kind of has a reputation sometimes of being just a ton of notes, a lot of busyness, but, you know, just stopping for a second, or, you know, a chorus or something, and just laying out or letting some silence go by, you know, can also be the best part of your playing. My teacher had said to me, you know, don't be afraid to use silence. It's the best you're going to sound all night.
Right. No, that's a point well said. You know, you've been tracking and recording for a minute now, John. You know, give me your history and background from your analog recording days and, you know, merging into the DAW world of recording now. I mean, what's your current setup that you're tracking recording on?
You know, I'm not. all my recording, I'm paying engineers, you know, and I gotta admit, I'm pretty naive when it comes to, you know, talking about the gear and the real, I guess, nitty-gritty of the studio. I just kind of know what the sound is I'm generally going for, and I'm fortunate that I know people who are very talented in the studio as far as engineers and producers, and just try to, you know, communicate to them, this is what I'm going for, this is the sound I want, and kind of let them do their job, so I only have to focus on just, you know, making the music parts sound good.
Right. You know, but I listen to a lot of your music, and I know it's primarily live acoustic instruments, playing live pianos, live guitars, live drums. Have you had a chance to play with any software since, or do you need type of track work on that yet?
I have not, although I'm getting a little more involved in that now. Really just kind of baby steps. And that's, I don't even know if I'd say that I personally am doing it. I'm just kind of being introduced to it more by a producer friend of mine, Kyle Jones, and he's kind of he's very experienced in that stuff, so he's always kind of pushing me more towards like MIDI instruments and things like that. And you know, I'm taking baby steps in that direction. You know, I realize technology is moving, you know, a million miles an hour, especially today. So at some point, I feel I got to catch up a little bit, at least, you know.
Right. Well, you know, nowadays, man, it's a lot more user-friendly with the MIDI than it was in the early 80s when I first started out tracking, recording. You know, but I found that there's so many different types of colors and textures out there on the software side of synths. Just really nice to add those extra colors on the palette when I'm creating, you know, so it is going to benefit you in the long run. So, yeah, take your time, man. There's no rush there.
Yeah. And, I mean, like, if based on the gig, I like to bring, you know, anywhere from 2 to 3, sometimes 4 if there's even room, bunch of keyboards that you have. All the choices, you know, I mean, live, I like to use a couple boards just to get, you know, different colors and stuff in the moment, you know, which is same as studio, but studio you had the luxury of doing one at a time, so, you know, just a lot of gear to bring live.
Right. Well, if you're playing live, man, what are some of the boards you're using? Are you using a Motif, Mosix, or any Korg or Roland, or what do you have up there?
No, my rig is kind of old. I got, you know, generally I use like a Fender Rhodes, which I want to say this one's from 74, somewhere around there. And I have a Yamaha S80, I want to say, which I think I bought that back in like
90s. Yeah,
that's a workhorse. I mean, that's still in just as good as condition now as it was then. I mean, this thing has lasted. And then I also use relatively old, I guess maybe 6 years old or so. I think it's a Roland VK combo, mainly for like organ textures and that kind of stuff. And then, you know, based on the gig, maybe an accordion or melodica or glockenspiel, that kind of stuff.
Sure. You know, what's cool about Yamaha, I mean, even some of their earlier boards, even with the DX7, man, I mean, their electrical Fender Rhodes on there just really sounds hot, like the MK series and the Yamaha, man, their sounds are still relevant today. I really haven't gone through any Yamaha library that really sounds dated to me. You know what I mean? You can go through the library, you're going to find something that you're going to use today, I guarantee it.
for sure, yeah. I mean, I know some guys that are... A lot of guys are just huge, huge Roland fans, and maybe I just haven't had enough experience, but with Rolands. But you know, I always lean towards Yamahas in that regard, because I don't know, just something about, you know, like you're saying, the sounds that they, the variety of sounds they have, the quality of sounds they have. You know, that's always been kind of what I've gone towards first choice is the Yamahas.
No, Yamaha's where it's at, man. I have the Yamaha Motif rack. I got the Triton Korg rack, and I have a Roland XP30 synthesizer board. And, you know, I kind of pull from all, but most of the production in my earlier times were all coming from the Yamaha. Now I'm probably running 90, maybe almost 100% virtual. Everything's inside my Mac now, but when I want some of that old vintage sound, man, I definitely go to my Motif rack, man. And it just really sounds rich and thick to me.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, as creators, John, man, you know, we get inspired at any time, any place to, you know, start recordings and really pull our songs together, man. You know, share your approach, you know, how you start your compositions and really mold it into a picture.
You know, sometimes it's just as random and simple as just throughout your day when you're not even thinking of music or anywhere near a piano, just like a chord progression just kind of running through my head. And then, you know, just jot it down or get home and mess with that first. Other times, you know, I might sit down with the intention of I want to write. And that, when I sit down with the intention to write, you know, that almost seems the longest process for me. You know, that might end up being a week or two before a short song is complete when I sit down when I want to write. But then when I'm just really let my mind wander, you know, then a song will come out and 5 minutes or something. So it's just kind of random, but you just have to be aware of when something's coming through, and you know, hopefully you're near a piano, but if not, you have a pen and paper with you or something so you can at least write it down.
Sure. The stuff that I hear on your tracks, man, I mean, are these session players that you tour with, or are these just live studio musicians that are lacing the tracks for you?
No, these are musician friends of mine that I play with, like, in these particular bands. I mean, the one trio, unfortunately, we don't get to play often enough because we're all kind of in different states now, but they're a trio called LSW. They're friends of mine. Dan Lering is the drummer, and Jimmy Stouffer is the bass player, and they're very good friends of mine, but they're also great session players. And I met them in the Denver area before they took off. Jimmy Stouffer, he's actually done some touring with The Fray. The band that he currently plays with, they were just on Rolling Stone Temple Pilots for a couple weeks, and Dan does a lot of stuff. He's worked with Malcolm Byrne out in New York, and he's in California now doing his thing. So just kind of lucky to know some talented people, and, you know, thankfully they're willing to play with me sometimes too. So
right. You know, give me your experience, man. You know, collaborating and performing with recording artist Matt Morris, man. How was that experience?
That was a blast. Matt is a great person, first of all. I mean, he's just very... He's a fun person to work with because he's extremely creative, he's extremely talented, which is kind of obvious when you hear him, but even in the rehearsal standpoint, you know, it's not just this boring, let's go through the motions. I mean, he's constantly throwing out ideas and receiving ideas from us and really willing to try anything with the song to get the feel he wants. So it's fun in that regard. And then, you know, his album coming out, the album When Everything Breaks Open, that was just a blast to get to do some of the promotion we got to do with that. We got to go out to New York for a little bit and play some gigs out there and do the Letterman show. And then we had found out right before we went there that, hey, by the way, when you're there, then they want you to go to L.A. and do Ellen. And so it was just this whirlwind of traveling and getting to play these great gigs. So, you know, the whole experience is great, and just feel extremely fortunate that he wanted me to be a part of it.
Wow. Man, that's truly phenomenal, man. I mean, just to have the opportunity to perform on a David Letterman show or Ella DeGeneres or, you know, Lopez tonight, man. I mean, that's a huge following. It's a huge audience. I mean, I just bet the energy was just off the meters.
Yeah, it was just a great time. I mean, and like just little things that I would have never guessed, or, you know, like we did a Letterman show in the Ed Sullivan Theater. It was like 50 degrees. I mean, they just always keep it really, really cold, I think, just to keep the audience awake and alert. And then, you know, we did Lopez. That was one of the loudest gigs I've ever played anywhere. I mean, played in front of more people, but that particular audience was just so loud that when we started, you know, I looked over to the drummer who was going to click off the tempo, and I saw him clicking off of his sticks and his mouth moving, but I couldn't hear anything as far as how fast he wanted to go, you know. So we were just kind of guessing when we started the tune, but it was just some cool experiences.
Man, I can imagine. You know, speaking of that creative zone, man, I got to ask you have a lot of experience performing, you know, with the band on stage. Finding that zone as an artist, man, do you feel it's in a studio for you where you really can take the time and work on your material before releasing the tracks? Or is it on stage where you get a chance to feed off the audience's energy and your fellow bandmates?
It's both, I guess. I mean, for better or worse, it's just completely different worlds for me. And I think I'd like to link them a little more and feel more comfortable in both, but I've played a zillion times live compared to a limited amount of studio experience, you know, relatively speaking. So live, it's just showing up and doing your thing. Like I feel more comfortable playing live than I do probably doing anything else in my life. I mean, that's where really I'm not the most comfortable. In the studio, you know, there's obviously prep time that goes into it. The one negative thing about the studio for me is that, you know, live, it's very easy for myself to feel inspired and, like you're saying, just feed off the crowd or feed off the energy of the band. When you're in the studio, it's kind of like, okay, well, I know I'm going to be at the studio at 10 in the morning next Monday. You know, I hope I got that inspiration coming down next Monday morning. You know, you have to plan for it, but that's not something you can plan for. So you just try to be as prepared as possible and just kind of stick to your routine that you normally do, I guess.
Right. No, that totally makes sense. You know, John, I'm a huge fan of playing covers. This is something that I do as a practice tool. I pull out some of the old records, you know, from George Duke and then some of the guys who I listen to as a keyboardist, and really develop my chops, make sure my ear is there for picking up different things that I probably didn't hear before. You know, is there any songs out there that you would like to tackle and really make it your own as a fan?
Yeah, that's something I really enjoy doing. More specifically in a jazz context, like when I do solo gigs or on the solo record I released, I actually did a version of Black Hole Sun that, you know, I tried to make my own, and I think there's, let's see, Sunday My Prince Will Come, I kind of reharmonized that on there, and the trio that I play with sometimes, LSW, we like to do that too. The fun thing for me is, I mean, I also like playing covers. I like to try to find covers that might not be, you know, like your standards. I mean, I have nothing against jazz standards and the real book and all that stuff and some of the greatest music ever written, but it's been played so much that I think for me to go and just play through the real book, you know, you can hear the real book tunes played a lot better than I'd be able to play them, so I like to find tunes that are more relevant to me. And in this generation, like, you know, I didn't grow up on tunes from the 50s and 40s. I grew up on 90s alt rock and, you know, 90s R&B and that kind of stuff. So I like to try to find songs in that realm that I might be able to twist a little bit and kind of put my own flavor to it. So it's a challenge, but it's really rewarding when you can actually pull it off nice.
Right. No, I definitely agree, man. You know, playing covers is such an essential tool to utilize as a musician, man. It builds ear maturity. You really get a chance to see where the artist or the performing musician really was going, and just to see their ability alone. I mean, some things you may not pick up as fast depending on your skill level as a musician, but over time it just really benefits you as a musician, so you get a chance to really jam with anybody at that point. You know?
Yeah, and playing covers, I mean, even if you're just playing them straight exactly like the record. Well, actually, I would say more so if you're playing them exactly like the record, you get a feel for where that writer was coming from and kind of their background. You know, like, you might incidentally pick up some of their influences, not knowing at the time, but, you know, it just gives you another context from someone else's musical perspective, I guess.
Oh, totally. No, I couldn't say it better myself. So, John, what is on the musical agenda for 2011?
For the remainder of this year, I've gotten, early this year, I got a group going called John Works in the Debut, doing primarily original music of mine, although the saxophone player is a great writer, and we are doing some of his tunes here and the occasional cover, but primarily kind of more modern jazz, original kind of sound, and that's really what I've been focusing a lot of my time on, is trying to get this group off the ground, and it's been going great. We were nominated as one of the finalists for this year's Telluride Jazz Competition, so that was cool to be even nominated.
Wow.
And we've just, you know, kind of been getting tighter and getting to know each other on and off stage, and it's been a great experience. They're just incredible people, incredible musicians. Aside from that, you know, it'd be nice to go into the studio with them if we could work that out later this year. But aside from that, just trying to keep busy and play with some other groups, you know, outside of the jazz realm, doing some R&B stuff and just whatever, you know. I mean, I like to at least consider every opportunity that comes my way and make a decision that's best for me at that time, I guess.
That's right. That's a solid plan to me, man.
Yeah.
What John is?
It's always a good thing to be busy, you know.
Oh man, I mean that's the goal, anyways, right?
right. And it's even better to be busy with stuff you enjoy doing. So that's really at the end of the day, to be busy with stuff I enjoy spending my time on.
Right, where it doesn't feel like a job, man. That's, you know, stay creative.
Exactly.
Stay inspired.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the whole reason I'm doing this, is to not have a job, in a manner of speaking, so.
Oh, no, I'm with you, man. Well, John, it's been a true pleasure having you on my show, man. I would love to have you back, man, talk about your new album, your new projects. You definitely got a spot here at the Producer's Corner, man.
I really appreciate that. I really, really dig your show. So I appreciate that.
Oh, thanks, man. Well, you have a safe 2011, man, and we'll keep in touch.
You too. Thanks a lot, Doug.
All right, take it easy.
You too. Bye.
Bye. And a big shout-out and thank you to John Wirtz for coming on the show and chopping it up with me. Again, another great show with another great musician. You know, John has excellent material. He listens to just about everything that's out there, and all of those influences are reflecting in his music. For more information on John Wirtz, you need to check out his website at www.johnwirtzmusic.com. www.johnwirtzmusic, and that's JONWIRTZ music.com. And for my past and current interviews, you can hit me up at www.spud2tight.com. www.spud2tight.com. And I'm also available on iTunes as a podcast, so if you have a Mac or a PC, an iPod or an iPad, open up the iTunes store, type in the Producer's Corner, click on my image, and you'll have a list of my past and current interviews as well. And to close out the show, I'm going to let the track that's playing in the background close out the show, and the track is by John Wirtz, and it's titled Blue Ridge Drive. So I want to thank everybody for tuning and listening in. Until next time, you guys keep it tight. Peace.
Give her the support that she's entitled to. Okay, but thanks, I'm here.
You're here.